On the show today, our focus will be on classroom technology. We have Gail Potratz joining us once again. Great to have her back. We'll be looking at a one-to-one computing initiative in Kewaskum, Wisconsin, and also some awesome picks for teachers. So you'll want to stay tuned for the Wells Tech Podcast coming up next. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to episode 203 of the Wells Tech Podcast for September 28th, 2011. My name is Martin Spriggs. And joining me, I have two lovely ladies as we celebrate Classroom Technology Day. We took the summer off, but now we're back at it. My normal podcasting partner, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Excited to do an education show today.
Yeah, I bet you are. And we are very pleased to have Gail Potratz back with us. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning.
How are you?
Happy to be back. It's been a long time.
It has, but you've been busy, and that's the subject of the show, Gail's summer vacation.
Right.
One of the reasons that we wanted to kind of focus on what you were doing, Gail, because you were involved with, as you normally are, MDMC, which is a conference that you teach at or have for the last couple summers, and lots of good stuff comes out of there. And you've got some other resources that you'd like to share. But for first-time listeners or those who have just picked up the show this summer, we try once a month to have a show focused almost exclusively on classroom technologies. And Gail Potratz is... remind me of your title again, Gail, at New London there.
Well, I'm the 8th grade language arts teacher,
okay.
And then I'm the school and church technology coordinator.
Right. So we are going to pick Gail's brain this morning about some of the things that she learned this summer and some of the things that they're doing in class, as well as Sally, who's always thinking about classroom technology. Right, Sally?
Yeah, I do a computer lab time with our kids K through 8, and we're doing some fun stuff this year as well. So
okay.
Definitely.
So let's jump right in. Gail, talk to us a little bit about this year's MDMC. First of all, what is it, and then what went on this year that you want to share?
Sure. The Milwaukee Digital Media Conference was held for the second year in a row at the Milwaukee Art Museum, which, if you've ever visited, is a phenomenal place to
cool
be
building.
Holed up for a whole week. And we had tables of over 100 people out in one of the gallerias, they call them, those kind of long side hallways, and working on, and the museum now has wireless, a pretty good wireless network, which really helped us out because we always had to build that for our conference. Mm-hmm. But that was great. The director of the museum is a wonderful guy who really is an innovative person with an eye toward the future and what an art museum, you know, should and could be for its public. So always a wonderful place to be for conference. And the best thing about the Milwaukee Digital Media Conference is that the teachers who come get to create real-world collaborative projects that have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best way to learn. And as they do this, and what they created this year was actually some pieces built with some Web 2.0 technology of many different kinds, which are going to be cataloged in the art museum for use by the docents in the children's museum. So if you take kids, if you're in the Milwaukee area, and you take kids to the museum and you talk to them ahead of time about which tour you're going to take, and there are all kinds of them, they will hook you up with some of the stuff we did for a pre-visit project that you can do, and a post-visit project you can do as well. So, some stuff that'll be useful to them.
I'm looking at the web page that you guys put together. It's actually a Wikispaces page, mdmc2011.wikispaces.com. We'll have that link in the show notes. Just reading the sidebar there, it's like a who's who of Web 2.0 tools. You've got Glogster, MindMeister, Online Stickies, Wordle, Tuxedo, Animoto, MuseumBox, VoiceThread. It goes on and on. So it looks like you were really incorporating the full gamut of Web 2.0 tools into the experience at the conference.
Right. We did a little different this year. Usually we highlight about three big ones and work those into all the projects. This year, the people were really on their own. They were able to be more innovative and pick and choose to design. And we really liked the way it went this year. Had a lot of positive feedback. You never know which Web 2.0 tools teachers are going to latch on to. Everybody latches on to something different and sees innovative ways to use them to help kids learn. And the point of this conference is once teachers are acting as students kind of in this conference and learning in this way, that they'll then, you know, grasp the vision that they can create the same kind of atmosphere in the classroom. So
which tools that you observe there are in use were maybe the most popular or, in your mind, the most useful?
Well, you know, Google Docs is huge right now, and the Google apps. So we always go through them every year. They're not necessarily creative in themselves. They're more functional, I'd
right.
call them.
Utilitarian,
but,
right.
Yes. But VoiceThread is always, people are always amazed at that because of the collaborative nature. It's such a neat way to collaborate around a piece of art or whatever it might be. So many multimedia possibilities there. So VoiceThread's huge. Animoto, I did that one, and that one was that one's always well received because it's so easy and so showy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy to make something that looks pretty cool.
At what
so
level,
that one's always good.
As a student, I guess as you're translating this into the elementary classroom, at what level can you begin to introduce these tools like VoiceThread, like Animoto to your students? Is it is it early on? Is it, you know, third, fourth grade? Is it before that? Is it after that? What's your experience?
That pretty much depends on the teachers. People
really?
Use
okay.
these in first grade. In our school, it starts in fourth grade or third grade, depending on what grade that teacher is teaching that year.
Okay.
So Chris Ladwig, I've interviewed her before for the show, and she does a wonderful job with technology integration in her classroom. So I really think that depends on the teacher in the classroom. I've seen things done in first grade from first grade classrooms. It just all depends on how your school's made up, I think.
So as you're introducing this technology into the, let's say, the curriculum, is it across the curriculum, or do you see teachers using it more in one area than another?
Across the curriculum, definitely. That's supposed to be one of our, you know, you want to do writing across the curriculum, you want to do technology across the curriculum, you want to avoid, you know, making little pockets to put them in and have people think that's where this is. It should be, you know, throughout the curriculum.
Right.
And it really is. It comes in all different places.
Mm-hmm. Kind of reminds me of our pre-podcast planning as we were talking about some of the influences, book influences, that is, that you definitely saw play out in your summer work. I know you talked about two particular books, The World is Flat and A Whole New Mind, and how you're seeing more and more of that type of philosophy, if you want to call it that, play into the use of technology in the classroom. Maybe you could share a little bit about those concepts.
Sure. Excuse me. Four of our teachers attended the Krista McCullough Academy, and that is a week-long technology camp, if you will. And I was able to attend the keynote address at that and was so impressed with the speaker, who was the superintendent of the Menasha schools, following that city pretty closely because they initiated a one-on-one project this year with all the sixth graders in their district, and they are using the the Google Chrome notebook gadget and evaluating that just in sixth grade before they go further. And I'm pretty interested in watching them as they go. So I was interested to hear what he had to say. And this gentleman talked about the fact that there are really so many two big changes or two big shifts in the last X number of years here in our in the world in which we live. One being, of course, the global economy, and the second one he described in a nice way, the the knowledge landscape or the internet landscape. He says there's no longer any intermediate internet. And what that really means is the idea that anybody can go directly to the source now since we've had the internet. Like, for example, how many travel agents are there anymore? There are some, but I imagine that is going away for most people. Mm-hmm. What about bank tellers? Most people do online banking. How, you know, there's all these occupations and vocations that are just diminishing because people have instant access. They don't have to go through an intermediary. Yes. Creating a will, getting a divorce. Those things are all out there for people to do on their own now. So that's a big change. And his focus was, with those changes comes one problem or one situation that needs to look at more change, and that's the fact that schools don't seem to get it. We still keep training people, for the past industrial age that mm-hmm. we're used to, but we need to be training them for the future. And Daniel Pink, of course, with his right and left brain ideas, that is also part of this, the idea that the left brain skills, you know, like the mathematicians, the engineers, the spreadsheet people, the logical people, that's not going to go away. But that's no longer enough. Mm-hmm. Now you need the right brain. If you're going to be a successful entrepreneur, the right brain qualities have got to be there, or you're not going to grab people. And he speaks in terms of grabbing them mostly in terms of sales and when he speaks right. to the business world. But translating that to education, I mean, what are we selling? Mm-hmm. We're selling knowledge. We're selling ideas. Okay, so it applies to us just as well. When he finished speaking, he mentioned these two books as being the basis of his thinking and where he's at. And I guess that's why the speech resonated with me, because those are two books that have really influenced me a lot in how I think about education for the future.
Yeah.
So those are books I wish that every school parent would read. Mm-hmm.
This disintermediation of, you know, a lot of these industries is interesting, and it's accelerating. New jobs are being created all the time that didn't exist. Not right. even just variations, but just whole new areas that we couldn't have even imagined 10, 15 years ago. And so I would think that the challenge for the educator is not just to train. You can't train for a job that doesn't exist, because when those students graduate from high school or college, they may land in a job that we had never even imagined. So I guess right. the challenge would be training them how to learn. How to,
yes.
In analytical thinking, in terms of understanding how things work, and maybe just the passion to be willing to learn new things, rather than kind of cookie cut your career mm-hmm. as you could a long time ago, because that's really not going to happen.
Right. In order to be innovative, you don't just, well, maybe some gifted people just are instantly innovated, but a lot of those things, problem solving and, you know, your higher level thinking skills that you try to work in to your curriculum and get kids solving real world problems or talking about how to solve them, or, you know, manipulating things on the internet to work through those kind of things. That's what's going to prepare them for the kind of thinking and developing that'll be required of them.
Right.
I'm just envisioning the guy from the movie who says light bulb. I can't think of the name of the movie now, but it has Gru in it. And anyway, the light bulb always goes off. And I can see my kids doing this, how you take that conceptual thought of preparing them for skills we don't even know yet and turn it into real application in the classroom, is providing them these kind of tools, guiding them to discover more and more of the capabilities and apply it to whatever their needs are in the classroom. So so their tool belt is full, and they can begin to innovate with things like VoiceThread or Animoto or right. Blogster or whatever it may be.
That's a great point, Sally. To really develop the kids, you equip them with their tools, but then if you know you're successful when they begin to choose the tool that fits the job. You know, mm-hmm. there's a smorgasbord of stuff out there. But to be able to pick the thing to demonstrate what they need to show, what the knowledge they want to share, you know, that's a skill in itself. And I think that's an important skill for kids to have.
And increasingly, that those skills require the ability to have a computer in front of them.
Yes.
And that's kind of a nice segue into our interview with Kurt Gosdeck from St. Lucas and Kewaskum, where they have a one-to-one computing initiative. And I would think that this decade is really going to be the decade where we see for many grades, maybe all grades, the ability to have computing technology in front of a student in the context of the learning environment rather than just the traditional computer lab setting where we've put together, you know, stations where kids can go to and work at the computer. They're going to work with the computer right within the context of the classroom at their desk because it will be integral to the learning process. So why don't we play that interview now with Kurt from St. Lucas. Kewaskum is a smaller town just north of Milwaukee here, and Kurt is the third and fourth grade teacher and also in charge of technology there, and they've instituted an initiative, as you'll hear him talk, that puts a netbook in front of each of his third and fourth grade students. So let's listen to Kurt. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast is Kurt Gosdeck, third and fourth grade teacher and director of technology at St. Lucas Lutheran in Kewaskum, Wisconsin. Good afternoon, Kurt. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
First of all, maybe before we jump into the topic at hand, which is one-to-one computing, why don't you give us a little bit of background about yourself, your current and previous calls, families, hobbies, life story, anything like that that you'd care to share?
All right. Well, I was assigned to Illinois Lutheran High School in 1993, so that dates me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There I taught economics, government, geography, PE, freshman math and science. I also got to coach the soccer team and assist with basketball. And to top it all off, I learned how to drive a bus. So,
well, of course, yes.
So that happens once in a while. From there, the high school and the two grade schools in Crete actually formed Crete Lutheran Schools. So in their time where they were reorganizing, they asked me to teach sixth grade and be the athletic director, and so I accepted that position and coached all the sports except for girls volleyball. So, and after that, then in 2001, I was called to St. Lucas to actually start off as the athletic director and do some coaching. But during the summer, one principal resigned and a new principal took over, so from there I also became the tech director and have been integrating technology and using it ever since.
So you were starting your 10th year, 11th year? You've been there 10 years?
My 11th year at St. Lucas and my 19th year overall.
Okay. Family? Things you like to do for fun?
I am married to Sarah, and my wife works at the Kewaskum Public Library, and she is also in her last semester at UW-Milwaukee, where she will receive a Bachelor of Science in Information Science and Technology.
Oh, geek home. Okay.
Now, she's going for library science, but that is the bachelor
right.
that fits that.
Uh-huh.
The funny thing is she asked me all these technical questions about technology and websites, and I say that's why I use Final Web. So,
good answer.
So if you're ever in need of a website designer in the future, she now has that technology. So
okay.
I'm starting a couple of side businesses, so we'll
Very
see
good.
Where that goes.
Very good.
I have two daughters. Jordan is in third grade, and so I am experiencing the teacher, parent, slash daughter, student scenario for the first time, and it's going well. I'm blessed to have a pretty sharp kid. And then my other daughter, Autumn, is in second grade, and so Next year, I like to say I'll have double trouble in my classroom. So.
Very good. Well, we appreciate you taking the time. And we both, Sally and I, have to say that when you sent your email, or voicemail, I should say, for our 200th anniversary show, that was our pick, hands down. Unfortunately, we couldn't pick one out of the batch. But for those who didn't listen to all the voicemails from our 200th show, Kurt, you got your third and fourth graders together, and I'm sure that there was some coaching necessary rather than the unison that they sang to us or said to us, you know, on the phone. But that was a really cool thing to do.
Well, thank you very much. I will say we only practiced once.
Oh, really? Is that right?
Yeah, so it must be good teaching. I don't know.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about your classroom. There's something different going on there this year.
Yes, this year St. Lucas started the first year of implementing a one-to-one computing program. And for those who are not familiar with that, I've been explaining it all summer, is each of our students has a netbook to use in the classroom. Part of the goal in setting it up was to, we kind of studied three different avenues with that. One was the school purchasing it. Mm-hmm. One was the parents purchasing the netbook. And another option was bringing your own device. And so finally our Board of Christian Education, with all the study that went into it, decided that the best avenue to do this for the long run would be for the parents to actually purchase the student netbook, and so that's how that came about. So our third and fourth graders this year have a HP 100 Mini-E, and it's a specialized netbook that HP has made, and recently has discontinued after only 1 year, so I'm a little disappointed mm-hmm. in that, because it's a nice little machine, has a carrying handle, and so probably has prevented one or two drops this year already.
Mm-hmm.
So the classroom's a little bit different in that it's easier for us to complete projects. We don't have to stop and leave a lab because someone else's class is coming in, and we can have extended work period. It's also easier. They have all their machines. They can take them home. So if they need to finish something up, that is possible. So in the grand scheme of things, I thought, well, you know, they won't need to take them home right away, and we can work them into that. But for some students, it happened earlier than others.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty excited about their use of the netbook in the classroom.
So is it just the third and fourth graders that got these at your school? Did any other classes jump on the one-to-one bandwagon as well?
It is just the third and fourth grade this year. We decided on third and fourth grade for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, I have been using some of the one-to-one computing techniques already, using some WebQuests, designing some project-based learning that I used in the lab, so I had the most experience with it. Secondly, I am the technology director, so it was felt that if there are any problems or kinks to be worked out, best practices to use as I went through the year, I could then share those as we move forward. Next year, then, we're going to add the 5th and 6th grade in year 2, and then in year 3, we'll add the 7th and 8th grade. And then after that, it'll just be the 3rd graders getting a netbook every year. So it's kind of a 3-year implementation. We didn't feel that it would be wise to, if you have a family of 4 or 5, to hit them all up at once.
Right.
And also, you know, to kind of break it in slowly. It also gives us the other teachers at the 5th through 8th grade level some time to prepare and get ready for the changing nature of their classroom, and also gives me time to say, here's what I did, here's what works well. This didn't work so hot, but it might work better with older children. So
is the idea that the kids would own the laptop for their educational career there, or is it on a cycle, a 3-year cycle or something like that?
It is the that the philosophy that they would own the netbook for their career.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not it makes it for 6 years, we'll find out.
Right.
But like anything, it depends on how well you take care of the machine
sure.
and the changing technology.
What's...
I would think that as our school and our children here get used to it, that when we get to the upper grade level, they may be able to go from a netbook to a notebook that might be more useful for a high school student as they graduate eighth grade.
Mm-hmm. What is the, I know it's a little bit early yet, but what was the parents' reaction when you said we were going to do this?
Well, I was a little nervous when we had sent out a survey in the fall of 2010 to kind of gauge where our parents and students were technology-wise at home and their thoughts about technology and education. And we posed that question, the one-to-one question, it came back with probably about 70% of our parents needing more information, which I was already prepared for that, but I spent the next couple of months then during the winter taking in some research so that I could present this information. Some of the information I presented to them was to look at the future of what workforce wants.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the skills that the workforce wants are the communication skills. And obviously, we're using Skype and telephone and email. The skills have changed, you know, since I've been teaching in the early and late 90s. Also that creativity. You know, the U.S. has always had very creative and innovative, you know, businesses, but they're seeing a little lack of that, and they want more of that, along with the critical thinking and the collaboration and team building. And Mark Robinson from DVI helped me out a little bit from the business perspective in taking a look at some of those things. So
mm-hmm.
as I... you know, educated the parents and said, you know, here's where technology seems to be headed. You know, they kind of said, yeah, you know, we see that. And some of them are more technological than others, but even
right.
the ones who, you know, didn't have a computer at home saw the need and saw where things were going.
Interesting.
Well, we know it's early in the school year. I'm sure there's a lot to learn yet, but curious about what the kids' reaction is to it and whether you've had any unexpected or difficult challenges thus far.
Well, I can sum it up. I've had three students. I had one student who's pretty active in 4-H and the fairs, and he had some animals at the Washington County Fair here, and he didn't talk about his animals to everybody he met. He told everybody he met that he was going to have a netbook in school. So his parents relayed that to me, and then they went to visit the Fond du Lac Fair, and that's all he could tell everybody is that he was using a netbook in school. So there is a lot of excitement that was, you know, created, and I think that the students still are excited. Obviously, one of the difficulties is in the technology in third and fourth grade teacher's mind, he has this ideal scenario that things are going to work just this way. And, of course, as a teacher, you know that something's going to burst your bubble. At third and fourth grade, there needs to be a lot of training. You know, some children, you can tell, have that experience at home and they pick things up easily. And others, they just need that repetition of doing something over and over again. One of the things that we're using in our scenario is I needed a way to have the children be able to receive documents and get documents back to me. So we're using the social learning network Edmodo, and that enables not only students to receive things from me and then to return them, but it also enables the parents to be able to log in and monitor anything that's happening. And that was one of the things that kept the expense down. Otherwise, we would have had to purchase a machine that had obviously a local network capability and running professional software instead of a Windows 7 starter. So,
and Edmodo allows for document sharing and transfer?
Yes, it does. So
okay.
Actually, every morning when my students come in, I send the assignments to one of their class folders, and then I also send their any documents that they need for any subjects to a class folder, and they just right-click and download it to their netbook. And then when that assignment is finished, whenever that may be, then they upload it back to me, and it tells me that they've uploaded it. So you can even get the mobile app for Edmodo to see who's done what. So.
And are they working in Microsoft Office, or what are they creating their documents in?
Once again, to keep the expense down, we have switched for the students to OpenOffice.
Okay.
For the elementary age, OpenOffice is a good productivity suite to get done what we need to get done. I obviously have to switch between OpenOffice and Microsoft Office as I use it with the faculty and for other professional things. And there's are a few, you know, minor differences. Obviously, when you pay for something, you expect something a little bit more robust. Mm-hmm. But it's just a little different to do it. But since our third and fourth graders haven't experienced really anything else, they don't know any better. So
right.
It works well.
Now, do you support and maintain the operating system and the applications on these netbooks, or is there some responsibility beyond that?
Well, it's technically the parents' responsibility, but since I've been at St. Lucas, usually I get a phone call a week mm-hmm. about some technical issue. So, you know, I've had to help out with a few machines. I actually took it upon myself and had a couple students load everything that was needed on them
mm-hmm.
Before the school year to take that off the parents. There are some parents who are terrified of that. Just do what you need to do to the machine, and then... And then give it to us, and we'll be good to go. So, if parents need something done, I get their administrative password, and you know, they trust me to do what needs to be done, and then I send them an email back and say this is what I did. So.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Very good. Well, Kurt, we're excited to hear about the program, and we're anxious to follow your progress through the year. I'm sure you probably have some goals and things you hope to accomplish, and we're hoping to get some reports throughout the year, maybe a few more times during the school year, and hear how things are progressing. What kind of things are you hoping to do this year?
Well, I actually gave my students an assignment before school started, so they were really excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
We have our Grandparents' Day coming up on October 7th, and usually I do some sort of technology project, you know, for the grandparents so they can see what's happening. And I thought this year they're going to have netbooks, so I'm going to have to do something a little bit more over the top than I usually have. So this year we're actually using Microsoft Movie Maker to import some images of their grandparents. Some of the pictures obviously have to be scanned because they're in old albums and black and white. But then we're going to use those images, and I gave the students then sections of questions from each phase of their life. And then they got to choose the questions to actually interview their grandparents. And what they're going to do then is they'll have their pictures in order, and then we're going to add the sound bites to those pictures, and it's going to be a documentary of one of their grandparents whom they've chosen, and then that's going to be presented when the grandparents are here.
Nice.
On Grandparents' Day. So that's kind of our big project, and I'm hoping by the time Grandparents' Day rolls around, it's finished. So
got to get them used to the technology and some aspects of it, and you know, in the context of a greater project. That's awesome. Kurt, thank you for taking the time. I know your schedule is busy, and you have a lot to do this year, introducing this new technology and making sure it all runs smoothly. And blessings on that work. We'll look to check in with you a little bit later.
All right. Thank you very much, Martin.
Thanks, Kurt. Sally, it was good to speak with Kurt about a very exciting initiative, which I'm sure there are going to be many other teachers thinking or maybe even implementing something similar.
Sure. As he described the process they went through, now is the time, folks. If you want to have one-to-one in your classroom next school year, I think it's time to get started with some of those preliminary steps that Kurt described. And I'm excited to hear from him. He's agreed to check back in with us throughout the year and see how things progress. And I'm also very excited to share the awesome photo that Kurt sent of his classroom. We got a photo of all of his students with their netbooks. It's really adorable. You guys have to check out the show notes for that.
WellsTech.Wells.net. Gail, what are you doing? Are you doing anything, thinking about anything up at New London as far as one-to-one computing?
Well, we've been doing one-to-one computing in the eighth grade for a couple years now. And actually, throughout the years, I've been working at that in whatever grade I had the most influence in. Yes, we're expanding, though, and we're very interested in the devices right now. We've been looking at different devices and talked to the gentleman again from Menasha, the keynote speaker, and he said the same. They really struggled with that, what the correct device should be. You know, many people are going the iPad way and the Google Chrome way and, the netbook way, like Kurt. And I don't know. It's hard for us. We've always had the MacBooks, and it is really hard for us to give that up. We know we have to just because of the cost. We can't afford to support that. We just can't anymore. So that's got to go. But those things are so powerful compared to, it's going to be very different just to basically be hooked to the internet and use.
Very different paradigm.
You're going to have some bigger multimedia machines in your room anyway, some desktops or whatever, because any movie making and that kind of stuff you do of any length or any intensity, that's just not going to work on those little things, you know?
Yeah, I've been in conversations with Google. You were speaking of the Chromebooks, and I'm getting a Chromebook in probably today or tomorrow to do some testing with. And what my plans are with it is to basically configure it as if we would give it to a student, just to kind of kick the tires, see what kind of apps are lacking, see what kind of apps will fill what is maybe a traditional app that runs on a computer lab's machine. And then just the overall management of it. I think one of the benefits of those is just the ability to easily manage for probably a technology person in most of our schools who is, primarily the sixth grade teacher, and they're trying to cobble together some kind of solution. So I think anything we can do there would make some sense. So
That would be most helpful, and we'll certainly be looking at your findings.
Yep. I'm excited to play with it a little bit. So
just think of the whole idea of kids and the one-on-one. Mm-hmm. The other day it struck me. I was sitting here working at my desk, and I had a gentleman in here working on our network. So we had sporadic internet, and so I decided just forget about it. Find other things to do that you don't need to go online for. And I did find some, but, everything I thought of had some connection. It's just amazing when you take that away, you don't realize how much time you do spend. And then so I thought about, kids. Kids come into the building. The first thing they do is they've all got their iPods, on there. So they've got that. And a lot of kids have, cell phones and even some smartphones walking around here.
Right.
And, they get off the computer to come into school, basically. Some of them are on there working before school at home. So, they come in here, and why should we take away those tools the minute they walk in the door? They're as or more dependent on the internet for what they do than we are. And we know how painful it is when we don't have that.
It's almost a time warp when you walk into some of our schools. Yeah,
I know. Absolutely. You have to use the tools. We talked about the tool belt idea. Well, they do have some tools that they may not be using them the way we will, but we can certainly use the tool in our way to promote what we need to move them through their learning. Yeah. So. It is going to go that way.
And obviously the concern is the cost, because technology is not inexpensive, especially when you're dealing with, one-to-one type computing. But I think Kurt has a good idea with, sharing that cost and recognizing that, hey, this is part of the educational tool set, that needs to be provided, whether it's, the parents or the school or the church or whoever. We got to figure out how to do this somehow.
And I think the Chromebook people kind of have a plan there to
model.
Help schools,
yep.
too.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. Let's move on to ministry resources.
Yeah, I recently subscribed to Christian Computing Magazine. And
it's
I'm not
been
sure
around
if they
for
have...
a long, long time. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they have a print version. Martin, you may be more familiar with
that. Well, when they
that.
Started, that's all they had. I don't know if they still do or not. I think they do, actually.
Okay. But now you can actually subscribe and download a PDF version. I actually downloaded it to my iPad right into iBooks and am able to read the magazine. It's about 36 pages, so a fairly good-sized magazine. Well done. Right there in my iPad. Anyway, Christian Computing Magazine at ccmag.com. They will also allow you to subscribe to their mailing list, so when a new magazine comes out, you can get links to the PDF version of the various articles. And they have articles kind of all across the spectrum mm-hmm. of technology and ministry. Things about Logos and ParishSoft mm-hmm. and how they have joined forces. There's an article of Christian Computing Hall of Fame, so you can learn about other people and what they're doing. I saw one about preaching and digital Bible study, and one about transitioning to voice over IP. So maybe a church office is looking to get rid of the telephone system and go to voice over IP technology for their telephones. Just kind of all across the spectrum, and I think worth at least the free download of the PDF for review each time it's published. So mm-hmm. check out Christian Computing Magazine. We'll have links in the show notes.
Yep. News and tech. We've got a number of stories. One of them involves that social network that many of us are familiar with called Facebook. And they call it the season of change, and that's certainly true. Anybody that's a Facebook user has probably seen this already, that their homepage doesn't look like it used to.
No, that's right. They did make some changes, and I don't know about you, but most of the people that are on Facebook that are friends with me complained about mm-hmm. those changes. I don't know how other people felt that are listening, but change isn't ever an easy thing. Although I've never seen Facebook really go back on the changes they make, so right. I'm not sure the complaining's really helping a lot. I think Facebook is moving toward a kind of a different model, and they are looking at different security settings and things to bring things to the forefront in a different way. Mm-hmm. I've read about a timeline that is coming. Haven't seen that on my account yet, but
right. It's in beta.
They definitely have a new competitor on the spectrum, and that's Google Plus. And I think Google Plus may be at this point benefiting a little bit from the Facebook changes.
Yeah, it's almost an arms race. They're trying to match feature for feature. You notice that Facebook is kind of putting a renewed emphasis on lists. They have these things called now smart lists that'll try and predict who should be on a particular list. And actually, they've done a pretty good job, at least looking at my friends and how they've kind of categorized them. But that, I think, is a direct result of Google Plus and their circles concept. So we'll see. I think that's only good. It will improve it, but I think it will make it a little more complicated. It's not something you just jump into and essentially understand. And I've always been challenged by Facebook, and this is this is another challenging thing.
I think the concept is that you could communicate with a smaller group of people. So if mm-hmm. you post something out there, you can control who sees it
right.
so that everyone on your list doesn't see it, or everyone you're friends with. And that's the whole Google mm-hmm. Plus Circles concept. But like you said, adding those layers means you have to manage those layers. You have to understand how to manage those
yeah.
layers. Things just get a lot more complex.
Yep. Gail, you're a Facebook user, right?
Yes, I am. Not very much. Mm-hmm. I'm getting notifications these days that I'm missing things. I should look, but I haven't gone back yet.
Yeah, and sometimes
I enjoy
people...
the fact that I know my nieces and nephews more than now than
right.
I've done in the past years before there was Facebook.
Yep.
That's really a positive thing to me. I'm not an everyday go on there and see mm-hmm. what's going on kind
yeah,
of person.
Nor am I. But
no. And I am doing the Google Plus, but I do not. I keep just marking everybody as a friend.
So, she's a friendly gal.
But increasingly, those social networks are being viewed as a sole communication source. So people will just communicate with me only on Facebook. They won't use email or other methods. So it's kind of something that you need to be in if you want to stay connected. So we'll see where it goes. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Gail, you want to lead us off this week?
Okay. I took a website that's been around forever, abcia.com.
And I've never heard of it.
The reason I picked it was I tend to gravitate toward older kids' things, and this is a K-5 thing. So my teachers here, I've shared it with them and pointed them to some specific things for the younger kids. This is kids' educational computer games and activities. Now, this site used to be kind of a takeoff on Wordle, and I don't see that anywhere anymore, so I guess they decided to boot that. They had a real easy little kid version of Wordle that they kind of was the center of their site for a long time. That seems to be gone, and they've replaced it with these games, and they're organized by grade level and subject area, and I went in there and just randomly picked a few of them and played them. And I really think it's worth a look. You could easily supplement curriculum with some of these. We like to do this like on the smart board in the morning when the kids come in. I know a lot of the teachers will have it up with either a smart board activity or could be something like this from the internet. And I like to call it incidental learning. They think they're just having fun and goofing around before school starts.
A bait and switch, yes.
But really, there's some good stuff there that you could really plug them into and gain some ground even before the bell rings.
Yeah.
Well, you made a friend out of me. That K-2 age group is probably my most challenging as I work in computer lab time with the kids because they're non-readers. So you really have to have excellent activities that are graphically oriented for them. And they also have a very short attention span. So What's really cool today is like yesterday's news, and we are so ready for something new, you know, all the time. And so having an arsenal of new education oriented, you know, there's counting fish and making a pizza and upper and lowercase matching. Those sound like perfect activities for that kindergarten, first grade. And what is my goal there? I'm just trying to get them to be inquisitive. You know, we talked about that at the beginning of the show, to follow the path and see where it leads and you know, make their own decisions and inquire and interact with the computer. And I think this is a great way to do that. It gives them some mouse skills, you know, just the basics, just getting them started and comfortable interacting and learning new things.
Very good.
Good stuff.
Nice pick, Gail. Thanks. Sally, what about you?
Well, I want to point people to the YouTube teachers resources that were recently released. For a long time now, and I think we've talked about it on the show in the past, there's been YouTube/EDU where you can find collections of education-oriented videos, and they're organized there for you. Well, YouTube's up in the ante. They have a new teachers channel page. You can find it at youtube.com/teachers, where they're giving you more ideas of things to use in the classroom, things like sparking discussions, organizing your content, watching, using playlists, so you can have your students work through a series of videos on a particular topic. They're encouraging teachers to create their own videos and create a video archive on YouTube so that students can go back and watch the lesson again if it is appropriate to help them with their learning. Just lots and lots of ideas and resources. They've put together a new YouTube teacher community, and you can sign up for email updates from the community. They said you'll receive email about incorporating YouTube into your classroom. Just loads of ideas there to help you get started. Now, I know YouTube has a downside to use in the education world because of the commenting and the related videos and things like that. And I think they're seeing that shortcoming for classroom usage, and they're trying to address that. And from the articles I've read, this is just the first step, and they are expected to make some other pretty large announcements related to education. So stay tuned. Hopefully we'll have even more to share with you for your classroom usage of YouTube.
So this is different than TeacherTube, right?
It is. TeacherTube is actually a completely separate website that was set up kind of following the YouTube layout and things. But this is actually on the YouTube website, mm-hmm. making use of YouTube videos, but for education purposes.
Right. Interesting. All right. My pick is some have known me to do a productivity tip. And I'm always looking for ways to streamline the email process. I probably get between 150, 200 emails a day. And most of that isn't spam, unfortunately, because those are the easy ones. But so I need ways to quickly move through my email and get my inbox to zero at the end of the day, which is always my goal. And for work, I use Outlook and our Exchange server, and I've got tools and tricks there that help me do that. But on my personal email, I use Gmail for, and I haven't had great tools to help me through that. Now, you always have tagging and categories, those kinds of things within Gmail. But what was really lacking was the ability to take a email and turn it into a task. And Gmail's or Google's task manager is not all that swift. One is there's no integration, but I found a tool called TaskForceApp.com that is a plugin, a browser plugin that works with Gmail, and it really works pretty slick. It's free. There's a premium version too, but I haven't found a reason that I'd needed to upgrade that. But essentially, it plugs into your browser, and then when it senses that Gmail is up, it pops up a little window that says Tasks, and you can tag an email, click Add as Task, and it puts it on a task list, and you can add priority to it. You can put it on different lists, and you can also make it even sync with Google Tasks. So there is some integration there, and that would sync across whatever browsers you're using. So I found that it's a very simple concept, but it allows you to, hey, say this email I need to do something with. I need to make this a task, and then you can set reminders. You can say just due on a particular day. And then it always links back to the email, so you haven't lost the email or the thread that goes with it. Gmail is very heavy and focused on that whole threaded discussion kind of thing. They call them conversations. So it links back to the entire conversation, even though you've created made a task out of it. And it's just a good way to manage tasks, especially if you are a Gmail user. So that's TaskForceApp.com.
Martin, we're going to all be so productive, and it's just thanks to you. We all need like productivity superhero costumes or something. Right. That's just amazing.
He always makes me feel guilty.
Oh, that's bad.
Just
I got to work on that. Guilt-free productivity, yes. All right, let's move on to community feedback.
Yeah, we heard from our friend Tom Rosenau, who's out in Pigeon, Michigan.
Yes.
And he sent us a link to the digital Dead Sea Scrolls. I might remember talking about this once in the past. It's been quite a while ago, but mm-hmm. you can actually see the Dead Sea Scrolls online. The mm-hmm. whole thing has been scanned and digitized. So if you're interested in exploring the Dead Sea Scrolls, you want to go to dss.collections.imj.org.il. So kind of a long URL. You want to just go to wellstech.wells.net and get there.
Right.
About
and
that.
It's kind of cool because they've done, you can really zoom in almost microscopically and see just the fine details of these very ancient documents. It's a very cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Next up, we had some Twitter conversation. If you're interested in communicating with us via Twitter, just add the hashtag WellsTech to your tweets. And this week, a couple of people did that. First off, we heard from Maren McPeak, mm-hmm. and she sent us a link to SpiceWorks.com. And SpiceWorks.com is a free network management software. Mm-hmm. She says that they, I believe she's at St. Mark's in Citrus Heights, California.
That's right.
They implemented an IT ticket system for their volunteer IT team there at St. Mark's using this software. And she said it's great for coordination and more. So That's really impressive that your IT team has their own software for managing their work. That's awesome. And what better way to do it than with a free product download? So
when we were looking for this kind of tool in the Synod office here, that was one of the ones that we considered because it was open source and it was very promising. It didn't quite meet all of our needs, but I think there are many situations where it would be just the right fit, where it has a ticketing system, of course, but it also has kind of this monitoring approach where you can see how things are going on the computers that are on the network and see what things are installed and if there are issues. So it's a very nice tool.
And then we had a couple of comments from our friend Jason Schmidt, who's out in Omaha, Nebraska. One was a link to a website called Care Calendar. It's at carecalendar.org. And Jason's comment, I got a kick out of it, a little less talk and a lot more action. Mm-hmm. And what this website allows you to do is coordinate meals and other help for families during times of illness or life-changing events like a birth of a baby or death of a family member. So it's actually a way to do that through the web. We talked about some of these kind of resources actually on our calendaring show last week, but this is one we weren't aware of, carecalendar.org. And, you know, that's something that congregations are really good at, helping out families in times of need, and maybe introducing a web-based management tool to that would be just the ticket for some congregations. So check it out if that's a need that you have.
And this is something that's near and dear to Jason's heart at this time in his life, as his wife is going through some health issues. So please keep Jason and his family in your prayers.
Absolutely. Jason also commented that he's using Google Calendar Sync with You Can Book Me to schedule appointments. And so he's right there with you, Martin. I think that was one that you recommended.
Right.
You
Can Book Me. That's a great idea. Yeah, very good.
Mm-hmm. And that'll tie up our community feedback for this week.
Okay. Next week, we are going to have another interview with somebody we had on the show a long, long time ago, J.J. Ramberg from Good Search. Most of our listeners are familiar with Good Search. If not, regardless of whether you're familiar or not, tune in next week because we're going to have a conversation with JJ about some new things that are happening at Good Search and Good Shop, and kind of a show focused on search and the search tools that are available out there, whether it be Google or Bing or all the other kinds of flavors of search engines that will help you find the stuff that is out there on the internet, and it's billions and billions of pages. So it's a good show to tune in if you're struggling with how to find stuff, or if you have maybe some suggestions about tools that you use. Definitely tune in and contribute to the show. Let's close the show. First of all, thank you, Sally. Thank you, Gail, for joining. It was a very educational experience for me. I think classroom technology is a very interesting topic, and many of our listeners, whether they be pastor or teacher, have an interest in figuring out how best to use it to train up our children. So I'm glad you both were able to join once again.
Thanks, Martin.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's close the show with a music, a new artist, L.A. Miller. And from their album Night and Day, song Flyin' Free. Thanks everybody for joining us. Come back and talk with us next week.
Wearing my guilt like a backpack, and tired of